This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Hello.
We are Gabriel Urbinam,
Zach Valenti,
and Sarah Shackett.
And we are here to, you know, do what we always do, which is hang out for a little bit, do some writing, do some talking about writing, just to kind of like check in with how we're doing creatively. But first and foremost, we are here to take a really, really, really bad idea that somebody had and see how we can turn it into a compelling or funny or interesting or just like curiously odd story, at least.
Curiously odd seems to be where we go.
That seems to be where we usually end up living. That's true.
Yes.
And Zach has the idea. Mwahahine over there because he is
the bad idea purveyor
du jour. Yes.
Indeed.
So Zach is about to read us a bad idea of some sort that he discovered in his travels through the internet.
Allow me to blot out the sun with my badness of this idea.
Okay.
And after he inflicts that upon us, Sarah and I will have 30 minutes to turn it into a good-ish story.
Yeah, and we have not heard this idea before. We, like you, have just heard the mwahaha. That's it.
Which, like, tone set.
Yeah, no.
If we were not worried, now we're worried.
I'm excited for how worried you are.
Well, all right. Like, without further ado. Yeah. Let's do it.
So, you've heard of Reddit?
No.
Okay, it's a website that has
Zach, that wasn't me saying that I haven't heard about Reddit. That was just a general, like, no.
I don't want to go where this is going.
Can we go back?
Yes. Just for anybody who doesn't know what Reddit is, it's basically like a giant internet forum where anybody can post anything about any interest. And there's all sorts of subreddits, like Reddit. It's like a website, reddit.com/r/podcasting or
it's kind of like
stapling bread to trees is like a thing.
Right.
That's like a subreddit.
Yeah. Like it's kind of like a big,
so there's like something for everybody.
A big city, but you can go to like specific neighborhoods in it where they talk about like whatever you are interested in talking about.
Exactly. And then other people can upvote the thing. So like things become popular and it becomes this weird window into the subconscious of human beings.
Yeah. Or like all of our collective flaws and proclivities as a species.
Yes. And I haven't spent much time on this website.
Okay.
Until recently.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
And I found something that I think you guys are going to like.
Which, by the way, guys, if you look at the show notes, you can see find the thing that Zach found.
That's right.
If you want to read along.
In r/AskReddit.
Okay.
And it looks like this user has been deleted since the 3 years ago when they posted this.
Always a good sign.
Good
yes.
start.
What's your deep web story?
Deep web? Is that like the dark web?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that it's like basically the part of the internet where you're not using www and .com.
Right.
And somehow you're making a Sith Lord more powerful with your Bitcoin.
Right. Like that is,
I don't know.
Mr. Robot territory.
Right. Yeah. Like cool. I think like the Silk Road used to be on there, which was like basically Walmart for everything illegal using like cryptocurrency, and like the guy was like taken down for ordering hits on people. It was
I also think that, at least to me, deep web has at least slightly less dark
sinister
connotations than dark web.
Like, I think the dark web is built on the deep web.
Yes, like the Venn diagram. I think that I hear sort of deep web, and I think more than anything, just kind of very intense internet.
There's
users.
Clarification.
Oh, great, good. Great.
Let's get to it.
Deep web, as in Tor.
Sure.
A network for private internet.
Yeah.
Browsing, the Tor browser lets you look at websites without it's privacy focused and anyway, so deep web as in Tor, but I imagine regular deep web users would stay away from sharing their experience. So if you don't have a deep web story, what's your most frightening internet story?
What a question.
Oh, wow. Edit. The front page was fun, but now it's over. Thank you for all the glorious stories. Time to cry for the rest of my life. And this has 12,000 upvotes.
Okay.
And over 11,000 responses, comments.
Oh, great.
And then there's one
I assume that we are going for one
in
particular. The most specific.
That's the most upvoted with 365.
I mean, asking what's the most, the most frightening thing that's happened to you on the internet?
Yes.
That in itself, not a great idea.
Can of worms.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I personally never received anything from any deep web affiliated sales folk. I did live with a roommate who would constantly receive the strangest brochures. At first, we'd receive brochures for cruise lines and the like.
Uh-huh.
I wrote it off as junk mail, but they came so frequently and they started getting stranger. Christian Mingle brochures, petting zoo brochures, brochures for any and all services one can think of. I felt kind of like someone was gaslighting me, but I never said anything, and the brochures would disappear as quickly as they came. So I didn't have any time to stress it.
That's
until one day I walked in and my roommate was delicately cutting into a brochure and pulling out a small baggie of powder.
Whoa!
Motherfucker had hooked up with the most low-key dealer I'd ever seen.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
man.
Just one of these strange internet stories. I think maybe one more.
We're not just covering the brochure idea.
I mean, that's my favorite one, but there's also another one immediately underneath it that's incredible. I'm just going to leave that for the listeners to go check out on their own time.
Sure. Yeah, because I don't know how we interface with multiple things at once.
I think you pick the one that you're most interested in.
No, I think that we need to be stuck with something.
Great.
I think that we need to be
You're stuck with low-key dealer increasingly strange brochures.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I hope you enjoy your fate.
Thank you.
Okay, so one...
Yes,
second.
1 second.
Do start the clock.
Well, I set a timer.
Yes.
Boop, 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 boop.
Okay, great.
Okay, great.
So let's recap.
Okay.
So our friend who posted this story lives with a roommate.
A roommate.
And we don't know anything about the roommate.
Yes,
other than
Oy Raves lives with somebody.
Oh, that was an important R-A-V-E. Detail.
Yes.
Lives with a roommate. We don't know anything else about the roommate, except he gets weird brochures.
And it starts off with just brochures about, cruise lines.
Yeah,
and odd things.
Normal brochure stuff.
Yeah,
junk
but they
mail.
Start to get a little bit weirder and more esoteric as time goes on.
Yeah.
And more oddly specific.
Yes.
Yeah.
Until eventually, one day, they come home and they find the said roommate gingerly manipulating a brochure to reveal the narcotic.
It sounds like literally cutting into it with either some kind of scissor or X-Acto knife.
Okay.
Man,
okay.
But
that is incredible. You talk about packaging that makes it hard for you to get at what you want.
Really, though, is it one of those bootlegging Bibles that they used to have where it's you open it and it's just hollowed out in the middle so that the flask of whiskey
fits
in there.
I mean, and also how thick are these brochures, right? You don't, when I think about, maybe cruise line brochures are a little bit thicker because there's pictures of all of the wonderful places you could go on your cruise or whatever, but direct mailers aren't, they're like single sheets, right? How big are these brochures? That's all I have to say right now.
See, and I kind of like the version where See, what comes to mind to me immediately is our, the post's narrator slash our point of view character just moves into an apartment. And I guess by necessity, there would need to be like another roommate, like a third roommate that he's interfacing with.
Right. Someone he knows. And then there's this other roommate that's there.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is that like he never sees the third roommate go out of his room. Like it's just one of those like
he's always a door in the
apartment that is perpetually closed.
Yeah. He has no idea if he's home or not.
Right. And he's just sort of this like, is there actually a person in there? Like, what is going on?
Is this a tax scheme? Like,
Right. Like, you know, is this like an entirely fictional person that like Mike, my other roommate, created just so that he would have some sort of weird tax break situation?
Right. Yeah.
But the thing about it is that the only signs of life about the person living in the third bedroom with the door always closed are these brochures that come to the house and are left in the like communal mail pile, but then they disappear. So our main character is sort of like there's clearly someone here and he is doing this. And so he starts to kind of like build this idea about who this person is through the brochure specifically as they get more and more esoteric and as they go from kind of, you know, cruise line to, was it like Christian Mingle?
Christian Mingle petting
zoo. The petting zoo is the one that caught my ear.
And any and all services one can think of. So many.
We need to get way weirder than that.
They felt gaslit.
That's, I'm thinking about that. And so I guess the journey would be eventually breaking into the room or getting caught up in whatever schemes the mystery roommate is involved. I kind of like if we never actually meet the roommate.
I kind of like that too. Yeah.
And this person, you know, ends up pursuing one of the weirdest brochures. It just gets to a point where it's like, okay, this cannot be a real thing. I'm going to go to this address and figure out like exactly what kind of Ponzi scheme this is. And then gets caught up in whatever the thing actually is.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. I kind of don't want it to be drugs that are like secretly. I want something that is, you know, maybe a little bit even more extreme and more out there to be hidden in the brochures if things are hidden in the brochures.
Right. See, my brain is trying to take this in too elaborate a direction too quickly because I'm trying to now kind of do like the flip side of what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, moves in, has this like mysterious roommate that he never sees, but like he knows that like the brochures are there. And he's, you know, kind of like lives with the brochures for like 6 months. And
doesn't think much of them.
Doesn't think much of them, but except he kind of develops a little bit of a like affection for like this person that lives in like the mysterious room.
Yeah.
Because he's sort of like, oh yeah, like, you know, who doesn't like cruises? And like, yeah, like if you're a Christian, you kind of want to meet other Christians in your area. And, you know, just like
I can relate to being lonely.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, and he's kind
of... What a weird, goofy dude. Yeah.
What a weird, goofy dude. He's probably like an agoraphobic. Yeah. He's probably like...
Silent brochure Bob.
Yeah, exactly. And he does this for like, I don't know, 6 months, a year, however much time. And then one day he comes home and, you know, he's talking to like Mike, his other roommate.
Yeah.
And he sort of mentions kind of like, oh, you know, Mike, like it's weird. I haven't gotten any of Brochure Bob's brochures. Like, no brochure has come in the mail this week. And Mike just looks at him just with the, like, weirdest, like, puzzled look on his face. Just kind of going like, what the heck are you talking
about?
What
brochures?
Brochures? What are you talking about? And this guy's kind of, like, our protagonist is kind of going...
Then the gaslighting begins.
What are you talking about? Like, we get, like, these many brochures a week. And like,
do you never get the mail?
No, we don't. He's like, yes, we do, because our other roommate orders, like, a ton of them. And, like, the roommate is like, what other roommates? He's like, no, like, the guy that lives behind that door. And then, like, you know, Mike goes up to it and, like, opens the door. And there's, like, an empty bedroom behind it. And all of a sudden, it's sort of this, like, wait, what was happening? Like, what is going on?
The other thing we could do is just have the suspicion be there from the start, like, have it become very clear through, like, weird brochures and, like, weird coded things that come into the mail, and the fact you never see this person, that, like, our protagonist is like, this person is totally a spy.
Right.
Like, 100%. This person's computer IT support job is a front for the CIA. He is clearly doing things he's not supposed to. And yes, it's actually just a goofy dude who wants to meet other Christians in his area. And it's sort of, it, you know, coming to sort of see this person's weird interests as genuine. But right. I'm interested in, like, because then Mike becomes a very, very sinister character, right, if, like, we're going with the gaslighting idea.
Well, and I think that it needs to be sort of a situation where, you know,
maybe it's a ghost.
The main character is kind of like, no, like, you're totally bullshitting me. Like, there's a ton of these brochures around the house. And he goes and he looks all the places where he knows there were brochures.
And there aren't.
And the brochures aren't there anymore.
Yeah.
But then 3 weeks later, something like, he loses a pencil underneath the fridge or something, and he moves the fridge.
And they're
and
all
there's a,
there.
No, and there's like one brochure just that like the cleanup that, crew missed under shit. There. And that's so when that the main character sort of like, oh no, like, it was all real. Oh my God, man. Like, I'm not crazy. I have not been, you know, having some kind of like incredibly powerful delusion the entire time that I've been here. And at that point, then it's kind of like, okay, hang on a second. Mike is clearly evil.
Yeah.
And no, what happened to Brochure Bob? What is going on?
And like, this is where there's a lot that could happen, but also like a lot of problems that I need to solve for myself of like, why does he stay in the apartment for three weeks after that happens?
No, I think, like, and I think that like the key is that after that, it needs to turn into North by Northwest, sure, where, you know, it's immediately like there are bad guys on his trail.
Yeah.
Incidentally, I think that What Happened to Brochure Bob is a great title for a movie, no matter what genre or type of story it ends up telling.
Just a little tiny bit. Just the cells, you know, because as you get older, the cells don't come back as nice as they did before. Yeah, well, a couple just died.
Excellent. I'm here for you.
I appreciate you. Cool. So I guess we have lots and lots of options, and we sort of need to figure out whether we want to tell like a North by Northwest style spy thriller.
Yeah, kind of like a paranoia spy thriller.
Yeah. Whether we want to have something that's a little bit more comedic and goofier, whether we want to have sort of like this weird, surreal dive into particular interests in the city where this is set, because there are weird brochures for things.
Interesting.
And I'm open to anything, pretty much.
What story do you guys want to tell?
So at the moment, I lean towards kind of the spy thriller, because it's the one that I feel has a like active conflict that I can like grasp onto. The other ones are still very...
No, they're still a little... Yeah, not quite as formed. And I don't know why I'm having hesitation about the spy thriller. Maybe just because, like...
Oh, there's plenty of reason to hesitate on there.
Yeah. Because Gaslight, the film, is wonderful. Gaslighting as
the activity.
The activity.
Less wonderful.
Less wonderful. And, like, a very delicate thing to manage in a story, especially a film. You know, like, in a lot of ways, I feel like I would read that John Grisham novel before I would see that, like, David Fincher movie.
Sure, sure.
Just because in a book, you'd have a little bit more space.
That's true.
To develop it over time. And I mean, we don't have to turn this idea into a movie. That's what we've been doing. But
that's true. We could turn it into
a novel.
Or a play.
Yeah. Ooh, play would be interesting.
Wow. No bad ideas first.
and that also, if it's a play, then that also maybe helps with your issue of why doesn't he just like run away? Because maybe it's kind of a Rear Window-esque situation.
Yes, where like he maybe
his leg is broken. He is immobilized in some way.
Yeah, his car is broken down, or you know, whatever.
They're snowed in something.
Yeah. Ooh, snowed in. I like.
Ooh, but wait. But if it's not a snow in, if it's something that
that's physical to him or something,
or just something that doesn't impede outside traffic, then instead of it finding a brochure under the fridge, what tips him off is that he gets the mail, and then one day, like, another brochure comes in, but now it's addressed to him. Like, now whoever is sending the brochures,
is
now the brochure
him.
Bob is gone. He is now, like, reaching out to him. You seem very skeptical.
I'm very skeptical about that, unless, like, the point of the brochures is a cult, in which case I'm in. And that, like, Mike is secretly, like, this is the Scientology rebrand we've been waiting for.
Oh,
and Mike lures people into his apartment, and they start getting the brochures. He gaslights them a little bit to make them sort of question their reality, and then the brochure comes and explains everything. I couldn't finish that. That's a bad idea.
No, I love it. It's so evil. Right, it's sort of this, like, come in, everything is wonderful. Oh, wait, nothing makes sense. Oh, wait, you need something to make the world make sense?
Here you go.
My God. Guys, we know so much about how cults work.
Yes, definitely.
This is 100% actually how it is.
A lot of sense.
Yes.
Just a lot.
This is very much the way it is in the world.
Let's talk about our friend Mike and why brochures are the vehicle for his evil plots, and what those plots are. And that maybe help us out.
Sure. And before we do that, can we maybe just give our narrator a name?
Oh, a name?
Or a point of view character?
Yeah, sure.
Because we've had, like, Mike is the roommate that is uninvolved with the brochures, unless he's actually a secret.
he's the mastermind of them.
Then there's Bob.
Bob, who lives in his room.
Who's actually
nobody sees him.
Receiving
he gets brochures.
Right.
Yes.
No, and
then I don't know, like Jeff or something can be our main character. Cool.
Jimmy.
No.
that was her. I take it back.
Dear listeners, that was an obnoxious joke that me and Sarah just shared a second ago about how one time we almost went crazy while writing a paper about Rear Window, whose main character is played by Jimmy Stewart.
Yes.
We now bring you back to our regularly scheduled programming.
That was so nerdy, you guys.
I apologize for nothing.
Nothing.
I asked for not.
Nor you should. But yes, let's talk about Mike and...
And what his deal is.
Right.
Yeah. Because brochures are such... Part of the charm of the original story is, like, this is such an esoteric media to be moving anything.
Yeah.
Like... You sort of think of brochures as junk. So, like, what is the... I guess it allows him to sort of fly under the radar with whatever he's doing.
Right. Like, that would be the thought.
15 minutes.
Oh, we're fine.
Lord. Okay.
Just saying.
That was a good contrast in reactions. Yes. Like, that there is something about brochures that, especially, I think, in the digital computer age, seem... quaint and outdated, easy to ignore.
There is a world where I think, like, if we set this in the 70s and 80s, I think we could tell, like, a more serious spy thriller, because you actually, there are things that, you know, people took seriously, and you could actually code information into them in a way that I don't think people really bother anymore.
Mm.
But yeah, if we're setting this story in the modern day, which it seems like we are.
Yeah.
Then yeah, it seems like they're, I don't know.
See, and you know what I'm intrigued by? You guys remember The Conversation, the Francis Ford Coppola movie?
Great movie. Go watch it.
Yeah. And in case anybody doesn't see it, the basic... premise is that Gene Hackman works as this
surveillance
expert, just kind of like somebody that does security and does listening and bugging, and he gets hired to record a conversation between two people, and he's very much kind of a, like,
this is just a job.
He goes and he does it, and afterwards he realizes that him giving the contents of that conversation to the person that hired him may have led to someone getting killed.
Yeah.
And he's not sure whether that actually happened or not. He's not sure it's his fault, how much of it.
And he slowly unravels and tries to get to the truth, and there are saxophones. It's a great movie.
It's a really, really good movie.
It's so good, and that's such a good way. That's such a good detail. There are saxophones.
But yeah, but I'm curious about if there maybe is something something like this, where, you know, like, maybe Jeff for 6 months just kind of is dutifully placing the brochures outside of Bob's room, and then in the morning they're gone, and he's kind of in this very, like, you know, like, this is like, all right, sure, like, these are some, like, odd esoteric topics, but whatever, I kind of find this, like, quirky and kind of off-putting and kind of charming, but, like, whatever, like, I'm just putting my roommate's brochures here.
Yeah, I'm being a nice roommate.
And then one day, like, there's something where he's just kind of like, you know, hey, Bob, are you there? Like, knock, knock, knock. No answer. He's like, well, you know, if you're here, like, you know, your new brochure is here. Still no answer. He's kind of like, you know.
Just slide it under the door.
No, he kind of like starts to like leaf through it. And he's sort of just like, wow, like, yeah, this like carnival seems crazy. This is really odd. Like, yeah, this is like odd. And they like turns the pages. Just kind of like, what the hell? Like, this page is like, it's barely written in English. Like, what the hell is like, you know, just kind of like some like odd term.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of like, yeah. Oh, whatever. And then he, like, slides in and under the door. And then, like, the next day he wakes up and, like, the room is empty and Bob is gone.
Hmm.
And now there's sort of this, like, wait a minute, did I do this? Yeah. Like, is this my fault? Did I let something out of a bottle?
It needs to be something more dramatic than just he's gone.
Sure. I mean, and then it can be, and then it can also be Mike kind of going, like, that room has been empty since before he got here.
Sure,
like,
sure,
we
sure.
have not had another roommate
ever.
We've been using it to store the ping pong table.
Yes, there's just a ping pong table.
An incantation of some kind.
Yeah, no, secretly this is a magical world.
I mean,
we would though.
We've thought of stupider things.
If there's not aliens or magic in it, it's not ours.
It's not ours. It's true.
This is interesting. And so Mike would then be kind of like his handler, or
that's kind of the
what Mike's role is what I'm still trying to grapple with here.
Right.
Yeah.
Inevitably, it ends up being some sort of like sinister.
Oh, sure.
Figure.
Yeah. But I wonder. Maybe it would help us to decide like what he serves. Whether it's, you know, sort of like anonymous and some sort of asymmetrical force for change and chaos, or whether it's like a government thing, or whether, you know, it's sort of more culty like we were talking about. What do you think would be sort of the best crazy world for our pal Jeff to get lost in?
That's a good question. And I'm not sure.
Sidebar, my brain is just stuck because I think Jimmy Stewart played a character named Jeff in an Alfred Hitchcock movie. And I'm just like, I don't think it's Rear Window, but it might be. And that's the problem my brain is actually trying to solve right now as I talk.
No, his name in Rear Window was Jeff. Yeah. No, it was Jeff. Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas
Rear Window's
like,
great.
If we're wrong and any film geeks are listening, we apologize.
We're so sorry.
And we will take 30 lashes each as penance.
I mean, this is the thing is that we talk
about
film.
Just tweet me. I'll take it.
Constantly. And we do things. I'm pretty sure I put Steve Carell in a movie he wasn't in last time. It's fine.
That's funny.
So alternative pitch.
Yeah.
To sidestep your very good question about like what is the sinister
great.
Before you go there,
conspiracy.
This just sounds awfully like it's going to a cabin in the woods place where it's like the deep state is hell and they're coming for you.
Maybe. Possibly.
Hmm.
Like actual literal hell.
Like actual. No, this is and it would be great if Bob and Mike are secretly Screwtape and Wormwood.
That'd be funny.
Screwtape and Wormwood.
This is the Screwtape letters are a fantastic comedic I guess it's an epistolary novel. By C.S. Lewis. And it is the advice of a very English demon to his young nephew who is just going out into the world to tempt humans. It's great.
And to tempt his first human. Yes. So it's kind of this, like, you know, like...
That's cute.
Dear Wormwood, like, thank you for the latest report. Like, you know, like, as your human goes through his routine, consider this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And don't get fooled, because, like, this thing that seems like he's giving into temptation is actually just, like, the weird British way of, you know, continuing with a stiff upper lip.
Societal comedy, and also sort of in a funny, backhanded way, how to be a good Christian.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no. Okay. So here's my alternative pitch.
Great.
So Bob comes out of his room, like, new version. Oh. Like, you know, like, we see Bob. and, you know, but, like, we don't see him, like, a ton. Like, he's kind of one of those people that, like, always lives in his room, like, surrounded by, like, his computers.
If this is still a film, if I don't know what we're doing anymore, but if, like, it's still a film, he's never in frame for more than 3 seconds. Like,
no, a little bit more than that.
Okay.
Like, he is, like, mostly, like, lives in his room, mostly the door is closed, but, like, the main character has seen him a couple of times.
Sure.
Usually when Bob emerges to, like, retrieve his, like, brochures.
Yeah. But can he still be silent?
Probably not with the thing that I'm going for.
I was making a shitty joke.
Sure.
That's all.
Oh. I did not catch that at all.
That's okay.
Until a second ago.
No, but he goes, he retrieves brochures. We see him a little bit, not a lot.
And then one day, whatever happens where the main character accidentally, like, pokes the dragon happens.
Sure.
Whether it is he reads something that he's not supposed to in the brochure.
Maybe he keeps a brochure. He's like,
maybe.
Or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And somehow Mike notices.
Mm-hmm. God forbid, like, he uses one of the coupon codes.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe. But yeah, but, like, whether if he's reading the, if he actually reads the brochure, suddenly, like, Bob is like, oh shit, gotta go, and disappears into his room. And then, like, Jeff turns around and he sees that, like, Mike had been standing there watching. He's kind of like, whoa, Mike.
What?
Like, whoa.
What's going on? Where did you come from, buddy?
Or however it happens, it happens.
Right.
And then the next.
Surprise, Mike.
And then the next day, another person comes out of Bob's room. But a person that looks very similar to Bob.
Just,
yeah. And the person that claims.
To be Bob.
And the main character
clearly isn't.
Right. And Jeff is sort of like, what the fuck is going on? And sort of new Bob is kind of going like, yo, Jeff, like, chill out. Like, we've been roommates for like 6 months. Don't you, like, know my face by now? And Jeff's like, no, like, what? Stop it. Like, what is happening?
Okay. Here's what I have a shitty joke that's going in my head right now.
Please,
that I'm just going to say is that this happens 4 times. So we can put all 4 of, like, the major Marvel Chris's. Bob number right. 1 can be, like, Chris Pine.
Right.
Number 2 can be Chris Evans. Number 3 can be Chris Pratt. Bob number 4 can be Chris Hemsworth.
That carries an internal joke of, like, I think that Chris Pine and Chris Evans look most alike out
true.
Of that set.
No.
And by the time that it gets to Hemsworth, it's like, you guys are not even trying anymore. Come on.
Right. No, then, like, it's clearly we've gone to sort of a good place kind of a world.
Right.
Where, like, clearly interacting with supernatural beings, clearly stuck there for reasons beyond your control.
Right.
Like, probably dealing with larger problems than brochures. But having that happen with Chris Pines and Chris Evans would be amusing.
Yes.
Anyway, end of shitty joke.
4 minutes and then 13 those seconds.
4 minutes and 19 seconds.
Oh boy.
We still are nowhere near. We're not anywhere closer to figuring out
what the
brochures are.
Yeah.
Like, is there some sort of, like, coded spy message that is coming in through the brochures?
Yeah. Well, I guess, like, if this is, let's just pick spy or supernatural.
Spy.
Let's pick spy.
Okay.
So I think in that case, the two things that come to mind are, like, codes for important assets like satellites or nukes or, you know, something.
election machine poll. No, I'm kidding.
No, this is we're going to explain the 2016 election.
All of
the numbers are secretly precincts, and
it's all Jeff's fault.
No, it's not all Jeff's fault.
Oh no, you know what it might be though. So say that he's getting brochures from 9 different organizations. So you know, you've got like the Christian Mingle, and you've got the Cruises,
and you've got
the Petting Zoo, and you've got like some weird hot dog, you know, store or something.
Yeah. No, like a garden gnome dealer.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, like 9 very, very weird places send them brochures. And each brochure contains, the information is encoded in it somewhere for a bid towards something that someone is selling.
Oh,
so it's
sure.
sort of this like, you know, I am selling you like the access codes to this particular missile launcher that
right.
I, in my dark web capabilities, have acquired. If you're interested in bidding on this, send your bid encoded in this particular way with this particular brochure brand that we are giving to you to Bob Salzberg at this address in this city.
Oh, sure, and he's the auctioneer.
Exactly.
Oh, yes. I love that. I love that. And so, like, he is sort of handling bids from 9 different shady individuals or organizations.
Right.
Oh, man. That's super cool. I really like that.
And the key is that he's just the auctioneer.
Yes.
He's not like in control of
it. No. He's just managing the bidding process. And we would need to figure out how, like, what and how, how he does this over a period of months. But
yeah.
I guess they're different auctions.
Yes. They keep stealing new things.
Yeah, no, sure. We can have like missing paintings and all
right.
sorts.
I see it now. Carmen Sandiego. The coupons version. The brochures edition.
Right. This is how Carmen Sandiego fences
yeah,
her goods.
That's right.
But like at least now there's something that Jeff can glance in one and kind
right,
of not
maybe,
quite realize what he's seen, but enough for Mike to get like nervous.
Yeah.
That.
And Mike is, again, I think probably secretly in control
yeah.
of the assets and is sort of managing this. Like the Silk Road has gotten too much publicity. So the way to take it underground is to go analog again.
Right. Exactly.
And so that is why they're using the postal service. For all of this.
This, of course, now raises questions about if these people have this much asset on their hand and this much resource.
Yeah.
Why are they, you know,
living with a roommate?
Why are they bringing a roommate? I mean, maybe this is like he's related to Mike or something.
Was that ding, ding,
was
ding?
Was that the time?
Time
that was
up.
The time.
All right. Well,
something to discuss another day.
Indeed.
My God, where you went with those brochures.
I mean... Weird brochures showing
yeah.
up. That's gonna be like weird, creepy situation. Yeah.
It was a good thing to bring. Thank you, Zach.
It was.
My pleasure.
No, and here's and actually like the things like one of the things that doing this show has started to teach me is how much little phrases or little wordings like really propel you. So just kind of like getting that story and within the context of deep web. Makes that a very, very different story from just like, so one time
I lived with a roommate who got weird brochures. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that like that definitely put us in a mindset towards
the sinister, we would not have gone spy, I think, without that deep web context for it.
Yeah. I think that we would have ended up sort of in a much more like bumbling person that like lives his entire life through postcards and
right.
has to learn how to like go out and actually go to the petting zoo.
Yeah.
If we maybe hadn't had that context. Which would have also been fun.
No, it would have also been fun. But then we got to like sell the Mona Lisa through petting zoo brochures, which was great.
Pretty good. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, you guys, we're going to just take a second here and we'll be right back to the show. But before we do that, we wanted to just, first of all, thank you so much for listening to this very, very silly show.
For real.
That we're doing. It has been so much fun to make it these past couple of weeks, and it's been even more fun to get to share it with you guys.
Absolutely.
To get to hear your thoughts on it, to get to hear your suggestions about what you would do with some of these bad ideas. It has just been a joy to bring it into the world and to see it go out into all of your lives and to share it with you, which is why we really want to encourage you to share in that joy and just that amazing, wonderful, full and complete feeling that you get in your heart.
I think that's called trolling.
When you... Sarah, let me finish trolling the audience.
Somebody else might call it sharing.
Yes, that full, complete, wonderful, my soul is finally at peace sensation that you get when you share no bad ideas, not your favorite podcast, but no bad ideas specifically with another human being.
Yeah, not just any podcast.
No. This specific one. Podcast, that is the one that gives you sort of that like nirvana, but better feeling. When you share it with someone,
right.
Or when you, you know, steal their phone and go into their podcasting app and just, you know,
that works too.
Sneakily yeah. subscribe them to our show.
Yeah. Download all episodes. They'll thank you for it later.
You know, you just, it's sometimes you want to surprise someone. No, but we
please don't hijack your friend's phones.
Don't actually do it. We're about to get genuine now.
Yeah. But I think all of us, as Gabriel said, really love doing this, really love the reactions that you guys have had, the bad ideas you've shared with us, and we really want this show to be a cool resource for people. So if you know someone you think would enjoy it because they're interested in writing or in weird stories or the deep web or whatever, share it with them, and that'll help us keep making more of these.
And absolutely. Help you make a better relationship with those people, because of course they'll love it. But no, in all seriousness, I think the best kept secret about podcasts is they mostly grow by word of mouth.
Yeah.
And as much
that
as
might be the worst we'd kept love secrets.
Yeah, actually
podcasts.
Though. It's pretty well known. As much as we would love and appreciate all the ratings and reviews and things on the iTunes, Apple Podcasts,
which
and such,
thank you so much for those of you that have already rated and reviewed us. The reviews are wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, and you know, if you find yourself being asked by a colleague, "What'd you do yesterday?" and you happen to listen to this podcast, like, go ahead and let them know about it. And you know, if they don't know what a podcast is, even better, you have a chance to change life,
to ruin their life
with podcasting.
Yes,
and you can show them all your favorite shows and your favorite app. And I know many a stranger at an airport and Uber driver and just random New York Cityite that I've met as
that was a fascinating cross section of like Zach Valenti's life.
And also just like a tiny thriller about how that sentence was gonna end.
But yeah, you never know what you'll unleash by introducing podcasts into people's lives.
But Zach, say that let's talk for a second about a hypothetical person who has already listened to the show and enjoyed the show, shared it with their extended family, their network of friends, even dropped an enemy or two a very nice email telling them about the show. And still their heart yearns to do more and to help us make more of this show, help us perhaps even do other projects like Time Bombs and other mini-series. Help us just in general devote more time to podcasting. Right now, that person is out of luck, correct? Like, there are no longer any more resources.
Common misconception.
Oh, really?
In fact, if you've heard that time is money and that we might have
just full of idioms today,
more
my friend.
Time, if we had more money, you, dear listener, can give us that money by going to nobadideaspodcast.com/support, where you'll be automagically transported.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. This whole thing has been bad.
But yes, it will take you directly to our Patreon page, where you can sign up to be a financial contributor to every episode of this show. Basically, you can buy us a coffee every week for $3 an episode. You'll get a patron exclusive writing prompts podcast for your own writing needs, where each week all three of us will bring a little prompt for you, and you'll get that right on Patreon. And every dollar we make on Patreon makes a big difference for us spending more time, not only making this show, but investing time in new series, maybe some fiction series. And if you haven't checked out our recent show, Time Bombs, that'll give you a little taste of the kind of stuff that we'd love to spend more time cooking up for you. That's at timebombs.show, and Patreon's at nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
And let it not be said that we are coming to you interrupting the show where we talk with more talking before going back to us talking again. that we don't do anything for you, because we also have a cool thing going on that might help you in your own writing and talking and various creative endeavors.
That's right.
And that is $10 off the transcription service Rev, which we have all used and loved, and it helps us keep track of things we're working on and creative projects. And it's just incredibly useful to be able to talk through your ideas or capture an interview and then be able to have it in a written form that you can dissect and go through and make cool creative choices with. So if you go to the board is behind me, so I can't see the link.
nobadideaspodcast.com/rev.
Yes.
That's nobadideaspodcast.com/REV for your first $10 off transcripts from rev.com. And we're back for the second half of the show.
That's right.
Yeah.
Second half is a little bit more freeform, a little bit more of a chance for us to
just check in with each other and maybe talk about creative challenges or sort of things we've been thinking about and sort of help each other think through, or we answer questions sometimes.
Questions, quandaries, existential dilemmas about...
Well, the first part is an existential dilemma, Gabrielle. That's we've covered that.
But it is kind of a little bit more of a chance for us to just have a space to talk out aspects about our lives and our creative work and everything in between.
Yeah, you'll find that helpful.
Yes. So, who's got something for us to discuss this week?
Well, it's surprise, it's me again.
You again?
You?
So bear with me.
Okay.
There has been something I've been wanting to talk about since we came up with the idea for the show. In fact, since
we came up with the original No Bad
the original idea.
The original bad idea.
Right. Yeah, right.
That this was a bad idea and we shouldn't
show,
do it.
Back when we were calling it like Fear of Public Shame or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember I like filled out a bunch of note cards where I was like, what are questions that I have for you guys? Like, how do you deal with this? Because I'm still... at a loss myself. And I think I remember the note card said slashes all the way down. Riffing on the like turtles all the way down joke. But
sure.
To Google it, it's worth a Google maybe. I don't know.
And this but is slashes, slashes like all I'm the way a down. Writer slash
producer slash actor slash this slash that. And like I think you both come to the title of writer more like the identity of writer more readily than I. I think I'm
we're
more,
just less talented at other things.
I second Sarah's answer.
I guess I just feel more insecure with the title writer than I do person who sometimes writes.
Like, you don't feel comfortable calling yourself a writer?
I guess it's just like something that I feel is like reserved for someone who's like,
let me ask,
mostly focused on that or publishing more regularly.
See, this is going to be my question.
Yeah.
And if you don't have an answer, this is totally fine, but I'm curious. If some person in a position of authority came to you and sort of went, okay, Zach, this is it. Like, we are setting the border. We are officially making the checklist for when you can call yourself a writer. And if you meet all the requirements on the checklist, you can call yourself a writer. And if you don't, you can fuck off and you are not yet a writer.
Okay.
But we need you to tell us sort of like what the requirements are.
This is a good question.
Yeah, like sort of like where is the line? And this is obviously a very, in some ways, silly question because it is not a hard line in the sand. That is kind of a like blobby, amorphous line.
This, like many of the questions that seem to arise in therapy, is like fun to answer because it shows me that I've made up a bunch of malarkey in my head. That's like why something is
humans don't do
bad.
That,
right?
No,
like because when I think about it, it's as simple as somebody writing.
Sure,
just somebody
anyone
who writes
can be a writer.
And right
is by definition a writer.
It's sort of one of those like nobody can tell you. It's like Neo in the Matrix, and the person that he visits, the Oracle.
Mm-hmm. There, we were both like, we want to help you, but we need a little bit more detail.
You're the person in the scene.
I've seen that movie. It's good. there are lots of characters, right.
But with the Oracle,
no one can tell you you're the one. Like you, like kind of have to know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like. I think that way.
Just like nobody
writing.
Can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it.
I guess so. No. Right. Right.
Hey.
And so, yeah, so that, I guess that's something that like I've struggled with as a creative person is sort of like anybody asks me for a bio or, you know, I'm like updating my website. It's like, how do I like sort of communicate clearly what I do when it's not clear for me? Like which one's a priority, and then when it's time to write, it's like gulp. Like I hope they don't find out I'm not a real writer. Like clack clack clack. I've never had
that feeling ever at all. What a strange sensation, Zach.
Yes, we can't relate to it at all.
No.
No, and I think that this goes back to a lot of things that we've talked about in this show before, which kind of boil down to. I personally feel that when it comes to sort of being a person with even a little bit of a modicum of mental health while also being a writer, a very, very important step is kind of realizing a lot of the mythologies that I can only speak to Western culture, but that definitely Western culture has kind of put onto the writer, and realizing that those are there and have a certain amount of power and have a certain amount of weight, but they're also definitely mythologies that we are subscribing to. And just to make this a little bit less abstract and hippie sounding, I think that it is very, very easy for us to kind of go, well, if you write, you are a writer, period. Like that's easy, simple. That is the way that English works. Done. And where all of a sudden it gets more complicated is that in Western culture, we tend to have this cultural weight of when somebody asks you, what are you? The real question that is getting asked is, how do you generate the money that you need to live?
Yeah, what do you do for a living?
Mm.
Right. Like, what is the skill that you bring to society that not only enriches other people's lives, but specifically enriches you and enables you to do
Yay,
the other things in your life.
Puritans.
This reminds me of one of my favorite yoga teachers. When I asked, what do you do? He'd say, for what?
Right. Which is a way healthier answer to that question. And, you know, and sort of having this attitude of when people ask you that, this is what we're kind of asking. That is neither good nor bad, but in itself, but it can be very, very bad, because this is where a lot of people run into these issues of, well, I'm not a writer, even though I write, because most of my money comes from, I produce videos for a startup.
Right.
Even if that takes up a comparatively small version of my work and a comparatively small version of my waking hours and a comparatively small amount of my like energy than the writing that I'm doing, there's still something in our brains that is kind of going like, whoa, 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 whoa,
doesn't
there,
count.
Buddy.
Doesn't
I've
count.
I've seen your bank statements. No, 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 no. You're a video producer. And yeah. And I definitely kind of sort of feel like I now identify as a writer. But there's still like a little bit of a like nervous jolt in my stomach about that. And I think that there's a very real sense of the goalposts keep moving.
Oh, totally. That's like, what I was going to ask about.
Yeah, like you sort of feel like, okay, God, like I can't identify like, as a writer right
until
now.
Until I get paid for something I write. And then once I've, once that's happened once, it's like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't count until like I can pay my rent.
Exactly. By, no, and there's sort of this like, I think for me originally it was until I get something published. And
yeah,
then I
no,
did.
No, no, no.
And then it was like until I get paid.
Yep.
And then until most of my rent is
And it
is
just
this.
Keeps going.
No, and, I, yeah. and I've said it before in the past that I think that I'm going to have that until, you know, like God willing, if like I get to a point where like I actually have books out and they are making up most of my income, and I feel that like even then there will be a part of my brain that is going like, no, it doesn't count until you have your like compiled best of anthologies, mm-hmm. retrospective
New York
series.
Times bestseller or
right.
nothing.
Yes.
Kind
right,
of
the
a,
Oscar-winning
yeah.
adaptation.
And I like, forget like Oscar winning adaptation, but like Lifetime Achievement Award. Yeah, like, you know, right. like it doesn't count until, and that is a recipe for the earliest that I'll ever be able to identify as a writer to be when I'm like late into my elder years.
Right.
And it becomes even possible for anyone to like do these things. And when you say it out loud like that, it sounds exactly as silly as it is.
Hmm.
But yeah, but in the moment, there is a very real nervousness to kind of going like, yes, I'm a writer. It sort of feels like, yes, I am a member of this very exclusive club. I assure you, don't look at my credentials too closely. Just right. let me through the door, please. Don't ask me any more questions.
Yeah, I'm curious about when, because I've sort of been in a similar place of like for a long time, when someone would ask me what I did, I would say, like, whatever my day job happened to be at right. that time. I would be like, oh, I do copywriting, or, oh, I'm a technical recruiter, or something like that.
And I also write. Yeah.
Because, you know, the one answers the question of, like, how do you make money? And the other is, like, the more vocational answer, the thing I like to do.
Yes.
Which feels like a lesser priority because Western culture. but it's very slowly, and I think I've had to do this consciously, sort of force myself to give the answer of, oh, I'm a writer.
Yeah.
I was working a job, I think like a month ago or something, where I had a moment when someone asked me, oh, what do you do for a living? And I like paused thinking about it. I was like, no, you're a writer. Say the words. And I think slowly I've been training myself to be better about that. And I'm not quite sure why that's happened. Like what subconscious barrier I have passed to get to that place. So I'm curious, like whether it was a conscious choice for you or whether you've just sort of slowly over time gotten more comfortable.
I think for me, it was mostly slowly over time getting mm-hmm. more comfortable. There was definitely, like the big sort of kicker point was that about 2 years ago, I lost the last kind of like big full-time job that I had. And at that point, Wolf 359, the audio drama that we were all producing at the time and that I was showrunning, kind of simultaneously got to the point where it kind of needed to be a full-time job.
Yeah.
And so at that point, it kind of became easy for my brain to kind of make that switch of like, okay, well, you were working on that thing, and now you're working on this thing. And it still feels a little bit disingenuous because you're also taking on a lot of kind of freelance assignments and doing all these other things on the side, and that is actually what is paying the bills. But you can now sort of, just in terms of like time spent and sort of like mental presence, you can say, I'm a writer, because that is the thing that you're expending that much energy on. That is the closest thing that I kind of have to a like specific trigger for that switch. But yeah, like, but even then, like for a while, there was definitely kind of like a little bit of a period of like, what do you do? Oh, I'm between jobs.
Yeah.
And I also write. Which is like, what? No, stop. Like, you know. But yeah.
And Zach, do you find that like, because I know that I've definitely struggled with this, that like that hesitation or that like not identifying yourself primarily as a writer sort of builds insecurity about writing?
You know, I'm definitely one of those people that relates to the quote, I love having written.
Okay.
I've always found the act of committing thought to paper a little bit stressful until more recently, I would say in the last few years, sort of discovering free writing and what I call journaling as a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unlocked a lot of freedom in other forms of writing that I'd previously been more stressed about. Because I think I've discovered for myself how writing is in revision, and expecting it to come out perfect the first time is
completely reasonable, and you're failing if you don't.
That is correct. Right.
Living in a fantasy.
And if anybody tells you otherwise, they are lying.
And so as I've sort of woken up from that fantasy...
We need to acknowledge how untrue that is.
We're being assholes.
Yeah, right. I think a big part for me of feeling more confident as a writer has been seeing the sausage get made on Wolf. And just like being on a fast-moving train that needs to book from, you know, station to station every other week. And just like seeing people that unequivocally in my mind are writers in a way that I've always felt like I'm a vacationer in like writing town, was just like, oh, it sort of drew away the misconception of it's this God-given, like it seems like it's a lot of focus and hard work and
right, not an
teamwork.
Innate talent.
Yeah, and also just seeing the teamwork of it, that it's not this like I go to the mountain and God speaks to me sort of thing.
Yes. Unless that God is called Sarah Shackett, but she does speak to us. Yes.
But I don't think, have I ever spoken to you on a mountain?
How far uptown have you guys taken meetings? Because I think topographically,
yeah.
Anything above 59th, no. But I guess to answer your question, I think where it gets complicated for me is writing feels deeply connected to everything that I do. Like when I am acting, so much of the time I'm rewriting the note, like the lines that I'm going to read, like when I'm memorizing things, like there is writing involved in that process, and also just doing free writing in character has been an exercise that I love. And then as a producer, like most of the job is emails, and that's a form of writing.
It is absolutely a form of writing.
You know, requires as much control as the best fiction when you're doing it right. And also lives in the rewrite, because God knows how many typos would go out if I just sent my first drafts. So I don't know. Does that answer your question? I feel like it might be a little diffuse as an answer.
I mean, it was all super interesting. I don't quite remember what my question was, to be completely honest with you.
I remember it was something along the lines of...
Just like
Yeah, the sort of this nebulousness
of the category of writer, and you're not fitting into it, hinder your enthusiasm or ability to write. And it sounds like what's happened is that you, by sort of not quite seeing yourself as a classical or a traditional writer, you found all these other ways to be a writer, which is awesome.
Well, I think like writing and living don't have a lot of distance for me.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about things that are stressing me out, I think about them usually by writing them down. Mm-hmm. and then looking back at it and being like, that's dumb, and having a better thought. But then when it comes time to like show up as a, you know, capital W writer TM on the Wolf 359 feed, I'm like, oh God, like, can you guys look at this, please? You know, or, you know, can we like do an outline together before I go off and write it myself?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's been a non-zero amount of insecurity. And I also think that it's gotten better over time, working on a project actively.
Having someone like Gabriel Urbina to steer you right and make sure you're not being an idiot
is very stressful.
Very helpful, I was going to say.
Inflicts so much pain upon people's lives. No, let me ask you guys something that I was just thinking about for a moment.
Hmm.
So, being a writer.
Yeah.
In sort of like that phrase where every single one of those words gets capitalized. That is quite stressful and like quite causing of insecurities for all the reasons that we've talked about so far.
Hmm.
Does it get any better or any sort of more manageable or any easier to get a hold on if you change the word writer to say audio dramatist or to novelist or to screenwriter? Just because, like, I feel that those are things that, just because they're more specialized.
Yeah, they identify the medium.
Yeah, and sort of more directly, have a more direct link to
their crafts. Right, and you're suddenly not in the same category as, like, Shakespeare. who
right.
was a writer.
Yes. And, you know, and if you're signing up in to be a screenwriter, you're suddenly in the same category as Billy Wilder. And if you're signing up to be a novelist, you're in the same category as Tolkien and Hemingway and all those people. And if you're signing up to be as an audio dramatist, you're suddenly in the same category as John Finnemore and Willis Cooper.
Yeah.
But there is still like just a little bit of like, you're now only taking on part of the gang instead of like the entire gang.
In some ways, this is why I wanted to ask the question, because I think it doesn't make it easier for me when I start to break it down. Like in some ways it seems superficially easier to go with something kind of smaller or more specific. But then it's like, leaving the rest of yourself behind if
it sounds like it might be easier for you to like consider yourself a storyteller, because that encompasses all sorts of things that you do
all manner
to tell
of sin.
stories, whereas for me, like thinking of myself as an audio dramatist or as a critic or as a novelist has a certain amount of appeal. I feel like I would have the same amount of stress because I'm like, I haven't written a novel, so does that really count? Yeah.
Hmm.
Mixed bag. What about you?
I think for me, it does make it a little bit easier, if only because it uncouples some nebulous goals and some nebulous like checklist items and trades it in for
really specific ones.
And it doesn't feel like it cuts you off to consider yourself a novelist who also may want to write screenplays or plays or
weirdly not.
I have a little bit of that.
Yeah, like I sort of run into a very specific problem, which is that I don't want to just kind of go, I'm a podcaster, because I have a lot of very strong feelings about the mental image that people have of the audio drama podcasting community versus kind of like the talk show podcasting community.
Right.
And the more that I can kind of draw people's attention to audio drama as its own separate thing with its own separate set of expectations, the kind of easier that I sleep at night. So I would... So I don't want to identify as a podcaster because of that. I would identify...
You say on your nonfiction talk podcast.
I would identify as an audio dramatist, except that a lot of people who are not in the scene hear that and are kind of like, oh, I see.
Is sure. that
some sort of cook of some sort?
Do you fix machines?
Right. Like... And then it's kind of like, well, this isn't really getting the job done either. So writer mm-hmm. is kind of the thing to fall back on. But if it wasn't for sort of those like particular specific things, I feel there would be so much easier and so much more kind of like easy breathing for me to just kind of go like, I identify as an audio dramatist or I identify as a podcaster.
The first thing I remember loving to write, I guess I remember writing my first thing when I was in first grade. And it was a terrible, terrible story about a dog and a cat.
Okay.
Just like
okay.
mirroring this like really weird movie that I probably shouldn't have been watching that my dad had on.
Classic.
For a minute. Where like, it was like one of the characters like dying in the street. And was just like, let me die. Like, I'm just dying. And so it was like,
whoa.
Really serious. Like this dog and the cat. It was like, just let me go.
Wait, was the
kids
dog
are dark,
dying?
Man.
Well, which one was dying?
Was I think the dog was the dying. Dog and the cat dying? Was just like, I'll go get something. I'll go get help. And the dog was like, no.
Just let me
it's
die.
It's too late. And I'm too tired for this world. I don't remember
That's
like
great.
Particularly loving writing that story, but I do remember 8 years later discovering poetry and like just like really, really digging that and then feeling a little self-conscious that it was pretentious AF. And like reading
See,
Rilke recently.
I live life. I embrace the pretense.
You embrace the pretense.
I say bring the pretense.
Y'all have met me in a much more relaxed place. The pretension used to be so much higher.
Huh.
But you were saying Rilke.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was reading the Rilke Letters to a Young Poet. I kind of want to meet...
More pretentious
like,
me?
Yeah, like time travel.
I mean...
We should have her on as a guest sometime.
You know, someday, perhaps when we have more whiskey in front of us,
yeah.
we're going to record the No Bad Ideas second half that talks about pretension. Because I have a lot of feelings about it that... Also coming from someone who I think like 16-year-old Gabrielle was.
That's who I'm talking
scary
about.
Scary yeah. pretentious.
16-year-old Sarah was probably not a nice person.
And I think that like it has a lot to do with at least you know some amount of it just has to do with like no one is their best self when they're 16.
Yeah.
At least I hope not. pretty much everyone that I've ever met as a 16-year-old is a deeply, deeply, deeply imperfect and deeply incomplete version of the fabulous person that they are going to be later in
life.
And also,
like,
when they are
working
16.
In overdrive to try and get to that better place.
Yes.
Which leads to weirdness.
It does. And I think that that is the thing that sort of produces kind of a really, like, toxic and really judgmental version of pretension when there is kind of this sense of it isn't a like easygoing, I am just going to like embrace this particular pretense and bring it into my life and kind of try to incorporate it in a way that is very easy for people to either take or not. There is just sort of this like very, very like
sort of militant
furious
attitude.
Militant attitude to it.
Right.
There's this great
sort of evangelistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the John Finnemore sketch where he talks about being a geek.
Oh, sure,
yeah.
Sure.
Which, if you have not, it's is it Souvenir Program that
it
that's
is
in?
Souvenir Program. Yeah. It's in series 5 of the Souvenir Program. Yes.
Yeah. And he just sort of has a rant about what it is to be a geek, and some of the other characters in the scene sort of propose things. He's like, no, that's not what it means. and there's like a healthy, good pretension that is. I think we associate with nerddom or geekdom that really just means caring and hard work and focus.
And I think with sort of this, like, I want to be this thing and I'm aspirationally trying to
yes.
get there by affecting it. And we all know that I'm not there yet. And that's okay.
But I'm committed.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's like a healthy like commitment version of it. And then there's also sort of like the judgmental punching down. Oh, you watch Friends? I read Tolstoy.
Right.
Kind of like a...
And that comes from a place of, I am definitely over there in that place where everyone can clearly see that I'm not yet. Who wants to tell me that I'm not there?
Exactly.
And we will meet outside. We'll
pistols
settle this
at
one.
Dawn.
Anyway, you can look forward to that
episode.
Future episode of No Bad Ideas that we just ran an extensive preview on.
We should,
in the meantime,
we should make that a stretch goal to get us like some really nice whiskey. Please join us on Patreon.
Rilke, Letters to Young Poets.
Yes.
Which is an incredible book.
It is.
I think you can get it for free online all over the place.
I'm pretty sure.
Because public domain is great.
Yeah.
When it works. It was a real like awakening for me to read that, just like especially the bit about like long story short, this kid is writing in to his hero Rilke being like, how do I poet better?
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, how do I get published?
I've been submitting
all these things, and
right,
everybody rejects them.
At a time when Rilke was like the rock star,
yes,
of the poetry scene, and just kind of like one of the like established geniuses of the
greats.
Time. Yeah.
And Rilke's answer was beautiful. It was basically, don't worry about getting picked, dude. Worry about whether you're like doing the work that calls to you, that, you know, doing work that challenges you. You basically worry about your own growth and development, not the accolades that,
mm-hmm,
come with the work.
Right.
Recently rereading that reminded me that I used to write poetry and enjoy it, and just being able to do what feels good without worrying about what it's called or what other people will make it mean has been really helpful for me recently, mm, in sort of like not feeling like I need to answer like which of the many title slashes that I could use is the right one or set.
Sure.
And just worrying about doing the next thing.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. There is these sort of like, we've been talking a lot about like outward facing concerns. Like, what do you tell other people? Like what, economic or sort of milestone marker you use to get a thing. But yeah, there is, I think the more important thing is like the inward considerations that you have and the challenges that you're excited to tackle. That was really cool, Zach.
Thank you. And that's not to diminish the, like, I think the real need in our culture to value artists for what they're worth and to pay them,
oh, absolutely,
a living wage.
Oh, for sure.
And I think the importance of the arts and culture is brought into question more often than it, you know, maybe deserves. But that's another episode entirely.
No, as is so often the case here, I feel that like we kind of are coming to sort of like the continuous reemergent sort of revelation of the best thing that you can do for your art is to not worry about what effects it is going to have outside of the realms of when someone reads this or someone hears this or someone experiences this, are they going to have a meaningful reaction to it and a meaningful just transformative experience from it? And when you do that, the art is going to probably be a lot better, and sort of all the other outside influence things are going to come from the art being better.
Yeah.
Up until the point where
you need business cards.
Just on a survival level, you cannot be focused on that because you need to have a place where you live. You need to have food in your pantry. You need to have kind of like the basic accoutrements that just give you the time and the energy and the focus and the ability to kind of ask yourself, how do I reach that person? And finding that balance is the super, 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 super fun challenge for anyone making art in the 21st century. Future.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks! See you next week.